James catches, puts up a three. Won't go. Rebound Box. Back out to Allen. His three-pointer. Bang!
All right, welcome, welcome, welcome. This is the From Way Downtown podcast. It's me, Shahan. I got Eric and Andy with me, and we got TJ up on the phones. We just finished watching the Celtics and Cavs game, so you'll be getting our raw reactions to it. Eric, how did you feel watching that game? I know you're a big Celtics fan.
Felt good. I'm going to be honest. I did not think the Celtics would be in the position of up 2-0 on this Cavs team, as bad as this Cavs team was in the regular season, or not about bad, but as below expectations as they were in the regular season, everyone kind of expected them to still come out, have that, the flip the switch that everyone expected. They did it against Toronto, but that might just be because they were in DeRozan and Lowry's head, and maybe Dwayne Casey isn't as good of a coach as people thought. Yeah. But clearly this Celtics team is very ready to take on LeBron and the Cavs.
The Cavs looked like they were ready in the first half. They were playing well defensively, hustling. LeBron was going off, and then just a giant second half collapse happened. I don't know if that happened because of LeBron's potential concussion nobody's talking about, because he certainly looked like for a good 2 minutes there he was wobbly. But they just, the Celtics took over in the second half.
I think a problem the Cavs had was kind of similar to what happened to the Rockets the other night, where James Harden and LeBron James are having huge nights. They're getting everything they need. They're getting their 40 points, their rebounds, their assists, but because they're doing so much on the offensive end, they're not getting everyone else involved. And then by the second half, LeBron maybe is a little gassed. Maybe he has a concussion. All of a sudden, Kyle Korver isn't as much in the game. J.R. Smith was completely out of that game.
He was terrible.
Yeah, no, J.R. Smith had a really bad showing tonight, and it was really apparent. I think the main thing that I took out of this game was just that the Cavs just don't have it. This is by far, I think, the worst team LeBron James has ever had. And you could really see it that he was done in the second half. And I'm not sure if it was a concussion, or I'm not sure if it was just that late run by the Celtics, but he just looks like he's out of Cleveland.
Yeah.
One thing I feel like needs to be said, I mean, throughout this game, Jaylen Brown was attacking LeBron. Jaylen Brown was incredible this game. He really was. For the most part of the game, there were three players that really gave the Celtics a huge edge. I mean, especially in the second half. Jaylen Brown, primarily for the first part of the first half. Then Marcus Smart and Al Horford were just two spark plugs for the Celtics throughout the second half.
And Terry Rozier started going off in the second half, too. Terry Rozier played a great second half. Seven straight points at one point.
Terry's dunk over LeBron was, honestly, I think one of the biggest game changers.
That's a crowd hype.
Was it really over LeBron?
I mean, it
was behind
him. LeBron wasn't concussed, he would have been able to just knock that off the glass.
Okay, if that is anyone other than LeBron on that dunk, it's an easy dunk, no one's talking about
it.
But because it's LeBron, he has the history of the chase down dunks. It's an impressive.
I just don't like the headline dunking over LeBron. Like, he wasn't.
Terry Rozier outran LeBron down the court and dunked it on LeBron.
Sure. Cocking it back, I mean, that's just a big balls move.
Yeah, that's
Terry Rozier has some big balls.
Rozier, I mean, if anyone can do the big balls dance on the NBA court, I think it's Scary Terry at this point.
But on Marcus Smart, I think he proved in this game that he's probably more valuable to this team than Terry Rozier. Because the thing with this Celtics team is they don't have Kyrie Irving, where Terry Rozier is basically a lesser version of Kyrie Irving at this point. Everything that Terry Rozier does, Kyrie Irving is going to do better. He's going to do more of. Marcus Smart's a completely different player. He's making the hustle plays. He's getting steals in the back where they lead to Marcus Morris.
That play where he dove out of bounds, it was incredible. To save that ball, oh my God.
He hustled, the Cavs didn't. That's basically the bottom line.
I think that's just, of this series, that will be the story. I mean, I've never seen a Cavs team in the playoffs look this gassed.
I don't even know if it's deflated.
They cared.
They just look so indifferent. They just look like, well, LeBron's leaving. Ty Lue isn't really telling us anything, so I'm done with this. J.R. Smith is over, and then he's like, eh, fuck it, I'll just shove someone in the back. Like, I'm frustrated.
No, that was a dirty play.
That was definitely a flagrant foul. Really dirty. Could have been a flagrant too. Stephen Gundy was really mad about that. We heard him bitching about how it wanted to be a flagrant too.
Well, I mean, rightly so. You have someone up in the air, and just pushing someone like that, that's how you get injured. And I think we've seen so much talk about how we need sports to just be more safe in general, and we see how the NFL's handling it terribly.
It's a much more dangerous play than DeMar DeRozan's with swipe of the head that got him ejected. Like, that's...
So, I got to ask you guys this question. How do you guys think of the officiating in this playoffs?
It's really tough to be an official, I'll say that. Like, I know everybody hates on them. It's a lot of indecisive calls that go one way or the other way. And I know a lot of the players, they always bitch about calls, but one thing that's always been said, they always want the calls to be the same on both sides of the floor. And it's just tough to be a ref to do that, but they haven't really... I don't know, it's a tough topic of conversation, but I think it's getting better. Or at least they're attempting to enforce what they're trying to enforce.
Go ahead.
I don't really think they've done a bad job. I think they've actually handled it pretty well. I mean, you saw it today with Marcus Smart got a foul call, and he like came up and like gave the ref a little like butt tap. You know, just like, good job, that was the right call.
Well, Marcus Smart always does that.
Yeah. No.
Marcus Smart, he never complains to the refs. He's always, oh, good call, gives him a nice slap on the butt. You know, he's got to sauce up the refs a little bit because he's got to get that late charge call that he knows he needs. But I think the officiating overall, it's been pretty evenly average to below average for both sides. It's just, for example, in that, I think it was game 3 of the Celtics-Philly series, there was a foul, and they didn't call it until the Celtics got the rebound and started moving up the court. And I think that's the one where people start to get frustrated when you're making the call 2, 3, 4 seconds after the foul, and when the play's already moved on, and all of a sudden you got to bring it back, and you're stopping a fast break, and maybe they agree with the call, maybe they don't, but the fact that you were indecisive enough to wait that long, that's where they start to get frustrated, I think.
You know, because I bring it up just because, I mean, this year that has been a big storyline where the players have been openly going after the refs because, you know, and they're what they see as, you know, bad calls, the officials see as consistent calls. So I bring it up because, for example, like, I was watching the Heat-Philly series, and in the opening stretch, I think, of game one. It was brutal. I mean, you had a free throw disparity of like 20-8, and we saw a lot of ticky-tack fouls being called on the Heat's end, whereas Philly was allowed to be a little more physical. So I bring it up just because consistency as far as their calls and whether and the nature of their calls has, in my opinion, been questionable so far.
I would say one more thing on the officiating is we, for the most part, are fans and we're biased. So what we see as a ticky-tack, oh, he swiped his hand real quick, that's kind of a weak call. And then if our team does it, or if it happens to our team, we have a different perspective than vice versa, and it creates our differing point of view from the officials.
There is one thing that I'd say I don't really like, and it's that, to me, it seemed like today the refs were like, you know what, Cleveland needs this. They know in the back of their mind Cleveland needs this game. They're going to play more physical. So let's ref this game differently. It seemed like this game was much more physical than the last game, and the refs did not call calls that way. And they just need to keep the whole series consistent. That game one, the same foul should be called in game two, and it just seemed like they weren't being called.
Well, I mean, I think the Cavs were also less physical in game one because they were down 25 really quickly.
Yeah, but there were also a lot of foul calls that they didn't call this game that would have been fouls last game. That's what I'm trying to say. And, like, that's what I thought. That's what how, like, the game looked to me. Like, and just, I don't know.
I understand the viewpoint of us, you know, we're fans, and obviously we're going to be a little more biased towards our teams. But, I mean, we even saw it in the Toronto-Cleveland series. I mean, DeMar DeRozan's ejection was absolute bull. And I think we can all agree on that.
Yeah.
With that, it's just kind of like in the rule book, if there's contact to the head, and I use air quotes with that, if there is contact to the head, like, technically it's supposed to be flagrant too, but why is J.R. Smith two-hand shoving Al Horford in the back when he's there, not a flagrant two as well?
Exactly.
All right, we'll move on.
Yeah, we'll move on from officiating and, you know, back to the Celtics-Cavs game. Do you guys have any more reactions for this?
Where do the Cavs go from here? I mean, I guess you go back home and hope that players like J.R. Smith and Grant Hill not Grant Hill, George Hill.
I mean, look, I'm going to be honest. I still think this, I don't think this series is over by any means. I think if Cleveland puts it together, I could totally see the Cavs winning the series in six, still pulling out four straight. This team, they were up in the first half, they were playing well. In the second half, it just looked like they gave up. And if they continue that first half play the rest of the series, they could totally win four straight games. They are capable of doing it. They have the best player in the world.
Yeah, but I mean, my feeling is, as good as LeBron is, he can't be five people on that court. And that's the thing, he just doesn't have the supporting cast around him to actually lift them up to a win. Just because, I mean, you saw it in the first half, you know, he scored 21 points. The rest of the team scored six.
Yeah. And but he also took a lot of those shots.
I understand that, but I mean,
they showed the stat. He was, 7 for 9 in the first quarter?
Yeah.
The rest of his team was, 3 for 11.
The rest of the team didn't play well in the first quarter by any means, but Kevin Love ended up with, 23, 25 points in that game. Like, we didn't notice it, but he did. And there are players. Korver played well in the first half, but J.R. Smith's a guy who does need to step up. George Hill's been playing some terrible basketball offensively.
Jordan Clarkson's literally unplayable.
He's not playing.
He literally did not play.
Rodney Hood only played garbage minutes, really.
Go ahead, TJ.
So, I just think it's going to... I mean, I could obviously see the Cavs coming back, but it's just going to be so hard for them to find an answer for the depth and athleticism that the Celtics have right now. And, you know, it's just like... We've seen, as we were talking about earlier, the Cavs just have so many one-dimensional players, while Danny Ainge has built this team, the Celtics, to be, you know, very versatile and, you know, long wing defenders and stuff like that. It's just like, you know, what are the Cavs going to do? They need someone to step up. I guess they're going to be at home, and they're going to have their role players start to play a little bit better. But, I mean, it's going to be hard. I mean, Boston hasn't lost the entire postseason at home yet. I mean, that's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, that is true. I just want to go out there and say it now. All of the Celtics slander I've had since my Heat dismantled them and destroyed any of their prospects.
Jeez, but we got to go there.
I take it back. I just think the way this team has turned out, the amount of depth that they have, and the amount of just versatility they've gotten out of their young guys. I mean, you got to remember, this is a team that doesn't have Kyrie Irving or Gordon Hayward.
It's starting to look like Kyrie getting hurt might have been better for this team. The way that Rozier has developed this year, they were probably weren't going to win this year, but going forward, like now that they have these players like Rozier, Brown, Tatum, who've all stepped up because the guys like Hayward and Irving were out, this team could be really good next year. Could even contend with the Warriors if they're playing like this.
I'm not sure if I'd go as far as to say that they would contend with the Warriors, because at this point the Warriors are just untouchable, in my opinion.
I think the Warriors have mastered the art of flipping the switch.
Yeah.
Kevin Durant went from, I'm just kind of out here against the Pelicans, to I'm putting up 37 points and no one is guarding me against Houston.
See, I think it's easier to say that, you know, I think we all know the Warriors are going to win the finals this year.
They will.
But I mean, just... You with the Celtics, you have this young rookie core that drove them to the Eastern Conference Finals and maybe the finals. Even if you don't win the championship this year, you still have like your second level guys with finals experience. You have your first year rookies who are getting this like hair on their chest in a manner that when you get Kyrie back, when you get Gordon back, it's invaluable. We always talk about veteran presence in a locker room. And when you have a second-year guy who they've been through the ringers, they've gone through it all, they have the guts, I mean, I think that's invaluable. And it really bodes well for Boston's future.
I would say this Celtics run, even if it ends with LeBron winning four straight or the Cavs pulling it together and beating them in this series, I think this is proving what trusting your GM and having this team stability, the front office stability the Celtics have had, see, it can really go a long way.
It's the type of stability we never saw in Cleveland.
Oh, I still haven't seen it in Cleveland. I mean, they fired their GM, David Griffin, after four seasons when he had just won the championship the year before.
They let Kyrie leave while they didn't have a GM, and that's frankly all I need to say on that.
Yeah, that's...
There's just a lot of personality that have to be dealt with in Cleveland. I mean, Jeff Van Gundy on the broadcast tonight was saying he's never seen a team eye-roll each other as much as the Cavs do, and that's just something you don't see... like Boston do at all. And I mean, I feel like that's just a culture thing. We see that with like the very great organizations in the NBA. I mean, you usually don't see it with the Spurs. I mean, the Celtics and even the Heat, even though, I mean, the Heat have the Whiteside thing, but teams like that usually have their players, you know, back each other up, but it seems like when the going gets tough in Cleveland, I mean, players just start to eye roll and blame one another. That's a serious problem.
Yeah, no, and Cleveland's had this issue where, you know, we talk about LeBron being the coach of that team, you know, all the memes you see on Twitter and on the internet, but it's scary how true it is. The front office really, it seems like they just don't have any control over this roster and what they do. And there was even a report, it was years ago, about LeBron's first stint in Cleveland, where he was scheduling team practices and booking team flights. It says a lot about this Cleveland organization and David Griffin.
They are a bad organization, and they got to turn around fast or he's walking out that door.
I think he's already out that door. I'm not sure if it was the concussion talking, but he looked like he was somewhere else tonight.
Yeah.
That second half.
One thing that's crazy about this team is, everyone says, okay, yeah, he'll stay. A lot of people think, oh, yeah, he'll stay. It's going to be hard for him to leave. But at the same time, a lot of people think he's going to leave. But, the Cavs, unlike before, they don't have a lot of assets now. So, they don't have a Kyrie or someone to trade like that. I mean, or they don't have a future number one pick to have LeBron. I mean, what do they have? They have the eighth pick. A lot of, people were saying for the Cavs to have a real chance of keeping him, they're going to somehow have to get in the top three in the lottery tonight, which we'll discuss a little later. But, I mean, what assets do they have? It's a problem. Yeah. I just, what will they do to provide more support for him other than this team right now that's, this team just doesn't have many good players or versatile players, which is what you need now in the NBA.
I think the Cavs are at the point now where if LeBron goes, they're tanking.
Well, 100%. I don't think it's their choice.
Lose LeBron. What's happened, LeBron came here and the Cavs said, all right, we have to overpay a bunch of mediocre players to try to contend. That's the LeBron effect. He takes up a lot of that cap space, and they don't want young guys. They want old guys who can help compete.
Tristan Thompson got a max contract.
Yeah. What do you think?
He's a Walmart brand Udonis Haslam.
Who could the Cavs get, or what can they do to even keep LeBron? Only thing that could keep LeBron is that if there just isn't another situation that hands down better. And that's really by process of elimination, he would stay in Cleveland.
I would say if he's going to go somewhere, it could be somewhere like L.A. where he wants to be a billionaire. He wants to work with Magic Johnson. I guess Philly is an option if he wants to go with the young guns and try to make another run at the title, but I don't even see LeBron doing that. But I think the thing with Cleveland, they still have Kevin Love, who still does carry some value, maybe not as much as he did even before this season, but he still does have value where maybe you could get a first round pick for him.
That is fine. So you're saying maybe trade Kevin Love?
Yeah, I think
nobody's going to ask.
Yeah, what are you going to get in return?
No, I'm saying if LeBron leaves, they have an asset to try to get maybe a young player, maybe someone like the Clippers or someone who thinks they're a piece away from making the playoffs.
They always seem to think that, and they're just not.
Well, it's great.
The Clippers are we're gonna put together a bunch of average players. We're
trying
to win this
Chris
thing.
Paul, man. I feel so bad.
I love
for
Chris
him.
Paul, but he can't be the best player on his team.
Stan Van Gundy and the Pistons did just trade for Blake Griffin,
okay,
who has
the new Clippers, I guess.
I'm sorry to interrupt you guys, but I just got this Bleacher Report notification. LeBron, after the game, says he won't lose sleep over the Cavs 0-2 deficit. And I'm quoting him here, "You lay everything on the line, you can live with that." How much of that do you think is bullshit?
Well, a lot of it, considering they didn't lay a lot of it on the line. It didn't look like they laid shit on the line there.
I mean, the look from LeBron at the end of the game was how it was in the Cleveland when he left, and in Miami when he left, where he's like, shit, I've done my job, this is up to you guys now. I literally put up a 40-point triple-double, and we lost by 13. That is no longer on me.
But going back to what you said about L.A., I'd love to see the Lakers trade for Kawhi and then sign LeBron. I would love to see that team.
I think it's very possible for them to get LeBron and someone like Boogie, Paul George, trade for Kawhi.
Dude, that would Boogie, awesome. I don't see Boogie leaving New Orleans, though.
I think
the setup he has with Anthony Davis is pretty good right now.
Well, if you're New Orleans and you say we made the second round of the playoffs, do we want he might make our team worse?
No. If you're New Orleans, you definitely want Boogie. You just don't know if you want to pay the price for him coming off a torn Achilles, which is
the money. They could probably sign a couple of guys to help that rotation instead of Boogie if they don't want him. But
do you know what we're saying?
Boogie thinks he can probably go out there and get a 5-year or 4 or 5-year max, and I just don't see it happening. So, especially with the Pelicans, and I feel like the Pelicans are like, look, we're going to give you a 2 or 3 year max, like max offer deal. And I mean, if you don't want to take that, then like we'll probably just have to look in another direction.
Yeah.
So yeah, moving away from where's the LeBron watch conversation?
that will certainly be a continuing conversation through this series and into the offseason.
We'll move on to the Golden State Houston series, and we'll kind of get your guys' initial reactions on that first game.
That was one hell of a game. That was a great performance of the Warriors. They shot like 60% in the first half. Some ridiculous number. The Rockets were playing. It was a lot of ISO ball, but James Harden's incredible. This is a really fun game to watch.
It's amazing. I don't know so much about like the real basketball guys on Twitter and on ESPN and on all that stuff. The real basketball guys know that the Rockets have been playing ISO, but everyone that doesn't is like, oh my god, the Rockets are going ISO the whole game.
Yeah.
Oh my god, this is revelating. We've never seen this before.
If you watch basketball and if you know Mike D'Antoni in any way, like the godfather of the 7 seconds or less offense,
score as fast as possible.
Exactly. And that's what Harden does, is just that. If he doesn't score, he's going to get to the line.
Yeah.
And their offense right now is mainly just, all right, we're going to have Harden and we're going to surround him with shooters.
Exactly.
And they work that drive and kick like almost to perfection. I mean, when they're on their game, they're almost unbeatable.
Yeah. I'd say the one thing they didn't get.
The only way.
Go ahead, TJ.
The only way Houston's going to have a chance, they have to start getting much more physical. I mean, they cannot let Kevin Durant. Like, everyone, like, says, oh, yeah, like, Draymond's the guy, and, you know, be physical Draymond. That's Draymond's game. The only way they're going to have a chance is if they get KD's face, they get in his head. Because that's really the only chance they got.
I think they got to do a better job also. They got to do a better job on the fast break. They didn't have a lot of fast break points. They had, like, under, what, like, 2 or 4? I saw some stat where they had, like, a really insignificant amount of fast break points where, like, that's what the Rockets are. They push the ball and they shoot threes quickly.
But does that say more about Houston's defense or Golden State's offense?
Oh, I think it has to be both. But Golden State offense was incredible. Kevin Durant.
I was on Twitter last night, and you know, I was seeing just the reaction of the game. And a lot of people, they posted pictures of a lot of Klay Thompson's attempts last night. And he just looked so unbelievably wide open.
This is a guy that literally scored 37 and a quarter. And there's a picture where there's no one within 15 feet of him.
Is that the Draymond pass? Yeah.
And that's the thing, but if you're the Rockets, that's obviously a product of Golden State's, you know, just amazing offense, because the way they can spread the floor, the way they can move the ball, and just as many options as they have.
Yeah.
If you're the Rockets, how do you stop that?
You have to outscore them, because I think an underrated part of that game was how well the Warriors defense, one, closed out on shooters. Like, there were many times on those driving kicks that the Rockets seemed to have perfected where someone's running Lupaba Mute off a wide-open three and he's missing a layup. Or they're running P.J. Tucker off and he's got to pass it back to James Harden with 2 seconds on the shot clock.
Yeah.
Also, as you mentioned, their transition D, it was hard to watch Houston at times. They had no transition. They did go almost exclusively ISO ball, but the problem was James Harden or Chris Paul would dribble for 18 seconds at the top of the key and then try to make a couple nice moves. All of a sudden that doesn't work, and the ball ends up in P.J. Tucker's hand with a contested three as the shot clock runs out. Or they don't even get a shot off. So I think there's definitely adjustments that Houston needs to make where they start their offense more. Maybe they have more of those back cuts that the Warriors have perfected. But I think in terms of KD, there's nothing the Rockets can do defensively. No. He's rising up and shooting over Clint Capella. Clint Capella is in his grill. There's no airspace, and KD is just rising up and shooting.
Kevin Durant's the best scorer in this league, and like it's really hard to stop.
They're gonna have to play dirty, bro. They're gonna have to play a little dirty.
I'm waiting for the Gerald Green. He's going to bait Draymond into something. Draymond had a tech within, what, 2 minutes?
He should have gotten ejected within 5 minutes. They let him play it out, and he calmed down. But he was really hyped up to the point where he should have shut the fuck up about 2 minutes after the game started.
Gerald Green is the microwave for Houston, and he's also the guy that can He's there, and he's going to be able to take Draymond off. If I think the only chance they have in this series is to do what the Cavs did, and just you got to nick Draymond just enough. You got to bait him just enough times where he makes one wrong swing. He gets one. He yells one wrong word. Boom, he gets a tech, or he's ejected, or all of a sudden he's suspended for the next game, and then you get the momentum, and that's how Houston can get back in this.
Do you think we're going to see a Draymond Green testicle kick?
I don't know.
I'd love to see one, but probably
a kick,
not.
A slap. I think something's coming from Draymond. He was frustrated at the beginning of that game. I thought he was going to get ejected.
Yeah.
But I think he's got to hold his temper. If he holds his temper, Golden State's going to be fine. Yeah.
But there is a positive. The Rockets didn't get completely blown out. Like, it was a pretty close game, and the Warriors played pretty well. I think we all agree on that. So, like, if the Rockets improve on a few things, like, they could definitely win games.
You also got 40 from James Harden.
Oh, and
that's like what happened with the Cavs. You got 40 from James Harden, and then you lost by 15 still.
Yeah, but Chris Paul didn't play all that well. Yeah, no, the Warriors are just great.
And that's the thing. I think we know that for the Rockets to even have a chance in this series, they have to be firing on all cylinders.
Yeah.
Frankly, I don't see that happening.
Oh, I agree. I think the Warriors win the series easily, but
yeah, I think Houston will be able to get out game two. I think they'll be able to win this next game. They're at home. I think the rest of the guys, other than James Harden, they'll be in the game. They'll be more into it than the last game. But I think I thought Warriors in six at first. I think we all kind of agreed on that.
I said Warriors in five.
I think Warriors in five, or even a sweep after that first game. That was just a demoralizing effort.
I don't think I see a sweep, but definitely Warriors in five.
Yeah. TJ, what do you think?
Hey, TJ? Man, I'm thinking Warriors in five also, and I was also going to say earlier, look, the Rockets' defense, I mean, their best defense is their offense. And, I mean, like you said, if they don't make it, their transition D is absolutely horrendous. It really is. And, I mean, there's just so many options for the Warriors, and I don't see the Rockets being able to sustain their offense and just continue to make shots. I mean, they're making shots in game one, like at the beginning of the game, and we saw the Warriors withhold that, and then, I mean, eventually break off in the third quarter. And I feel like that's how the series is going to be. That's how each game is going to be in Houston, let alone going to Golden State, where I think it's just going to be a blowout from the get-go.
There was no way the Rockets would win two straight in this series. They had to win game one, and like that's the demoralizing loss. To know, like, at best you're going 1-1 into Golden State, like, the series is over.
It's a hard thing to watch. I saw this debate on Twitter. I spend a lot of time on Twitter for anyone who doesn't know, but I saw some writers talking about how entertaining Golden State is to watch. And, you know, when they first came together and coming off that 2015 championship, I think they were really fun to watch. But a lot of people have just been saying now that it's really boring. So I just wanted to get your opinions on that.
I'm just going to put this out there real quick. I know a lot of people say, oh, KD ruined the league by joining the Warriors. They're unbeatable. I think that KD joining the Warriors, maybe right now it kind of sucks because they look like they might just run away with the next couple championships. I think for the future of basketball, I think this is one of the best things that could have happened. Because I think this is raising the competition. This is raising the level of intensity that people are going to need. People are going to be like, okay, there's the Warriors. They are that good. We need to match that level.
But is it raising the competition or is it just concentrating the competition?
Yeah, I agree with that.
Well, I'm saying in the future, I think that it forces teams to be built differently. It forces teams to be built like how the Celtics are currently built, where you have a lot of wings, you have a lot of switchability, which overall is probably more entertaining to watch than the early 2000s or the 90s, where it's just bully ball. You give it to Hakeem Olajuwon down low and he posts up. You give it to Shaq down low and he posts up. You give it to MJ, he posts up. Where I think this, where you have a lot more passing, you have a lot more, even threes are more entertaining, where I do think the Warriors' brand of basketball and what KD and them do bring to the table, I think that will be better for basketball in the future.
Yeah, but then you're going to have these like three or four teams who are great and the rest are trying to tank because they know they need four or five great players to win. I don't know if it's good. I don't think it's bad for basketball. I can't say it's good for basketball.
So that's what you would think, But there is 100% still going to be teams that are just like, oh, we want to make the playoffs. Maybe we're not going to win a championship. Maybe we're a piece away. But we just want to get to the playoffs. Like, the Timberwolves have done that. It seems like the Nuggets are doing that. The Pacers are probably going to do that for the next few years. The Raptors have done that
for years. I feel like that's been Charlotte's plan for the last 10 years. So let's just get to the playoffs.
Yeah, but, I mean, even the Heat are doing that to an extent where...
If that's the case, how are these top few teams going to raise the bar? What players are they getting from what average teams? Like, if they're going to try to make the playoffs, they're not trading guys.
What I'm saying is it's forcing everyone else to improve their game. It's forcing LeBron to find another part of his game just to compete with them. It's forcing someone like Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown and the Celtics where they're like, okay, we need to reach that level. We need to do this. We need to work X amount harder to get there. But obviously you are still going to have the teams. You're going to have the Hawks, the Mavs, the Grizzlies who are just like, fuck it, we're not going to win. We're going to bottom out. But then eventually those teams do cycle back up and then they have to raise their level of competition by being better overall.
Because see, my issue with this is one, like from a fan's perspective, if I'm watching basketball, I want a competitive game. And quite frankly, when you have super teams, you don't get competitiveness.
Would you say...
And I think KD going to the Warriors, it was a great career move for him. And, you know, I'm all for people teaming up. But I think if you just lost to a team you were up 3-1 against, they knock you out of the conference finals. They went 73-9, and you sign with them in the offseason, and then you celebrate your rings as if, you know, it was all you. I think that's a bitch move. I don't like KD. I really don't. And I don't think it elevates the game of basketball because right now they're the archetype of what a basketball team wants to be because they exemplify that small ball death lineups. But the thing is, you have Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Kevin Durant, Draymond Green, and the list goes on of a team that's just not beatable, quite frankly.
Well, all right, I get that, but...
So I don't see how that elevates the game.
Because it forced everyone else is like, okay...
To tank?
What I'm saying is...
There's only so many great players...
Yeah, how do those teams that are really good get better? They can't elevate their game to better than they are. It's just not possible.
Okay, what I'm saying is it forces individual players to realize, okay, we need to be at that level. We are not at that level. Maybe we can't get there right now, but if we work harder, we do this, we do that, maybe we add an extra shot that we didn't have before. Maybe we add a turnaround jumper. Maybe we add a step back. It forces them to do that to try to reach that level where, okay, maybe the Warriors will dominate the league for the next few years, which we probably all agree is going to happen, but I'm saying after that time, I think the level of play in all of the NBA will be higher than it was right now because players are like, that's what we need. We need to be that good. We need to build on our game. We need to get better, us individually, us as a team. We need to get to that point.
I agree with you in the sense that it will make individual players, it'll elevate the game of basketball in general, because they have evolved the sport, and it started with, you know, the Miami Big Three, and the Warriors perfected it, where they play positionless basketball, they work the ball around, and they thrive off just good fundamentals. They're a great basketball team, and it's great basketball to watch, but it's just not fun.
Yeah. And this, in my opinion, this is what's going to happen with the Golden State Warriors. All the young kids who watch the Warriors and say this team is incredible, when they're old, they're going to be the ones, all of them, regardless if you like the Warriors or not, we're going to say, I witnessed the best team ever play basketball. Same thing with the Bulls. Everybody who grew up watching the Bulls say, nobody can beat the Bulls. The Warriors aren't better than the Bulls. 30 years from now, 40 years from now, people are going to say the same thing about the Warriors. This is the best team ever. Nobody's going to be able to beat them. But as of now, they're not allowing teams to, like, teams can't catch up to them just because they don't have the talent that they have. I can't see a way that there's another Warriors team. The Rockets are the closest thing we've seen to it, but they're still really far away.
All right, so I think we all agree the Warriors are going to dominate the league for the next few years.
They should win the next few championships. I can't see them losing.
My whole point is this post-Warriors dynasty where usually dynasties last 3 to 5 years, give or take. I mean, eventually, like, Steph, Klay, Draymond going to the finals – 4 or 5 years in a row is going to run them down. Iguodala is 33, 34 now. Even Kevin Durant has played he's in what, his 10th year at this point?
He's getting old.
So eventually they're going to come down. I think when they do come down, it forces all of these young kids that are in the NBA, right? Or maybe not kids because they're my age, but all of these young guys in the NBA who are either rookies now, in their second year, their third year, guys that are going to be drafted this year, drafted next year, I think it's going to force them to increase their level of play because they're like, oh shit, these Warriors, they're that good. Maybe we can't compete with them right now, but we're going to need to be good enough to catch them when the time comes. Karl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins and Jimmy Butler in Minnesota have got to be thinking like, okay, maybe they're more talented than us. That means we need to get better. That means we need to improve our games. The Celtics, let's say they go against the Warriors and they just get shellacked, which is probably what would happen. They'd probably lose four, maybe five games. That means Tatum and Brown go to the offseason, they're like, shit, we need to improve on this. We need to improve on this. We need to get to that level, and it's going to force all of these young guys to improve their individual games. They're forcing these teams to come together better as team, play better team basketball, and be better as a team rather than, oh, shit, they're really good. The only way for me to do this is to go over there.
But that's exactly what they did.
But what I'm saying is with these young guys, they're not even allowed to do that.
Well, if you're young guys and you lose the Rockets versus the Warriors, it doesn't matter. Like, you're still going to want to improve. I don't think just the playing the Warriors, losing the Warriors has that effect single-handedly. I don't think it matters what team you lose to. Like, I'm disagreeing with this.
Yeah, because if anything, I feel like if you get just swept by the Warriors, and you know that, like, pretty much the reason you lost is because they have they have four generational talents on their team. They are by far a better team. And there is really not much you can do about it. No matter how much you practice, you're not gonna get past them. And even after them.
Okay, so you're gonna tell me that Donovan Mitchell, who just lost to the Rockets in the last round, that he's not like, okay, my game is not good enough right now. I need my game to be at this level for us to compete at this level.
I think they're going to have that thought regardless. And yeah. It doesn't matter if they're getting walloped by a super team.
Yes, they will. But having the Warriors there where the Warriors are this added level, it's going to force guys that are like, oh shit, instead of being at the level the Rockets are at, I need to be at the level that the Warriors are at. I need to get to that level.
Look, if you're truly great, you're going to improve regardless. I don't think you need a team to motivate you.
Okay, but there's only one best player in the league, yes?
Yeah.
It's going to force and there's only one best team in the league. It's going to force players to be like, okay, not only do I need to be the best player in the league, I need to be the best I need to be the best team player in the league. I need to get everyone around me to be the best team in the league. Where the Warriors are now, the Warriors took the bar that the Heat had that bar for the 4 years, and then now the Warriors are taking over that bar, and the Warriors are bumping that bar up. So everyone else is going to have to bump their level up. So everyone else is going to have to get that much better to compete with them and to be better than them eventually when the Warriors do fall apart.
Oh, yeah. I guess we should... TJ, any final thoughts on this, and then we'll move on to the NBA draft.
Let's talk about the teams that don't have a chance.
Guys, I agree with what you're saying. It's going to raise... It's going to make each person want to get better. And you were talking about how dynasties, last for like 4 or 5 years, the usual what we see. But, can we just think about one thing for a second and how dominant the Warriors could be? They're getting to year four of their dynasty. If they win this year, they'll be 3 or 4. And everyone's going to say, like, oh yeah, who knows if they'll want to pay the luxury tax to keep everybody. If Klay agrees to a deal to take less money, a lot less money, which apparently he's very open to doing, because he seems to be just having so much fun, he's loving what he's doing, winning championships, this dynasty could go on for 6 to 7 years, honestly. I'm sorry, it could.
Well, I would say the thing with that is eventually teams are going to catch up to them. Eventually, like, as you guys were saying, I will agree with you guys on that, where teams are just going to say, screw it, we're not good enough right now, we need to get this great player onto our team. Teams are going to do that. And eventually, just like it happened with the Heat, it happened with the Spurs to an extent when Tim Duncan was in his last years, where they just get run down after playing that many games. You're playing 100 to 120 games in a season, 3-4 seasons in a row, and you're going to run out of gas eventually. Like, D-Wade and Chris Bosh were...
We're definitely going to see that. This unbelievable team is going to make people want to get so much better, but that's just not going to... We're not going to see anything different for the next 5 to 7 years.
So we'll move on. The NBA draft lottery was today. The Suns got the first pick. And I think it's pretty apparent that they want to take Luka Doncic at the first.
Wait, but before we start talking about the actual prospects and the teams, can I just say that the whole thing of the NBA draft lottery and how ESPN runs it is the most ridiculous fucking thing in the world?
Oh, the commercials! Oh my god!
They got a commercial at the 10th pick and then at the 4th pick, and it's a whole hour. Yeah. Special it takes 30 for fucking it seconds. Let's just send balances for it.
I'll be very honest. In my 20 years of being an NBA fan, I've never once given a shit about watching the draft lottery.
And not only do they, it's not they pick 14 teams. They only pick 3 fucking teams, and then the rest is just based on order. It's just, it takes literally 30 seconds. Yeah, they announce it all at one point.
ESPN has their lead up starting at 6:30. They're like, oh, the draft, we have a time slot for an hour for this 5-minute lottery where we're also going to juice it out for 2 commercials in between it.
But would you expect anything different, though? I mean, come on. They're going to try to milk money and ratings out of anything.
That's how it works in life.
Yeah, I would expect it, but it's just the most ridiculous
thing. It's frustrating to watch.
It is.
All right, well, let's talk about the Suns. They have the number 1 overall pick, and there's really 2 prospects that have separated themselves, and they're pretty much opposites. One's DeAndre Ayton, the 7-foot center, played at Arizona his first year. The other one's Luka Doncic. We haven't really seen much of him. He didn't even play that many minutes. I don't think he started on his own team at Real Madrid. But one's a point guard, one's a center. So, what do you guys think on what they should do or how those prospects line up against each other?
I think if the Suns take Doncic, I think Booker's time in Phoenix is limited.
Really?
I don't see that working well.
No way.
Really? Doncic is a pass-first point guard, I think.
Yeah, but I think Booker's also a very ball-dominant guy. Hmm. And unless, you know, we see some great off-ball improvements from him and from this team in general, I think Booker's going to want out.
I'm not sure if Phoenix is going to get rid of
Yeah, Phoenix definitely won't want to part ways, but I don't think Booker's going to want to stay in that situation.
Huh. I mean,
I kind of get what you're saying, but I couldn't disagree more, because not only, I mean, they're going to build him up to, like, make him want to, like, you know, be the guy or whatever, or be a huge part. And we see teams, when they rebuild, they always have usually, like, one guy that's been through everything, and I feel like they're setting Devin Booker up to be that guy.
Look, the Suns are going to take the best player. If the Suns think Doncic is better, they're gonna make them work together, and they'll be fine.
Yeah, I mean, if the Suns do agree with Shahan's point, they would just take Ayton at that point. If you feel like, oh, if we take this guy, Doncic, we have to get rid of Devin Booker because they're not going
to fit. I don't think they're thinking, like, okay, if we take Doncic, we need to get rid of Booker. I think Booker is thinking, if they take Doncic, I'm not sure.
I think they'll be a 1-2 combo. I think they'll be pretty good together. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of goes back to my point earlier, where it almost doesn't matter what Devin Booker wants. He's locked up there for what? He's got another season on his rookie deal, and then he's a restricted free agent. Where, let's say, he signs for another 4 years, he's locked in Phoenix for 4 more years.
So if Booker wants to win, however they're going to do that, he doesn't care.
Mm.
But it brings us to the number 2 pick was the Hawks,
the Kings.
Oh, the Kings.
The Kings snuck up from the 6th or 7th.
Huge move tonight. Huge move up.
The Kings moved up 4 or 5 spots tonight, which is huge. Because they really need that second overall pick, because they're going to get one of the 2 top prospects also.
We have the same debate with them, where if they take Doncic, all of a sudden you have 2 probably pass-first point guards. I don't know. Or maybe Fox isn't a pass-first.
Fox is more ball-dominant than Booker, so I think it'd be less of a fit there.
Yeah, you have two ball-dominant point guards there. Where if the Kings get Ayton, that De'Aaron Fox, Ayton pick and rolls and all that stuff.
Ayton's a big boy, and apparently he could shoot pretty well too. Yeah. So he's just a huge prospect. But
so where do you guys see Trae Young going?
Trae Young's a really interesting prospect. He's a guy who's great in college.
I guess he'd go to Dallas.
A lot of guys don't think. What pick does Dallas have?
That seems like a Mark Cuban pick. That does seem like a Mark Cuban.
Let's see where Dallas is.
I don't think Dallas will take him.
Yeah.
I think he'll slip to 8 or 9.
They have the 5th pick. They have the 5th pick.
Yeah.
Frankly, I think the issue with Trae Young for me is he's undersized. He's a 6'2 point guard.
People just want to be Steph Curry, and it's just like, it's really hard to try to. There's not going to be another Steph Curry. So it's tough to see where he could fit, especially because he is less athletic and a little bit smaller. But he has the potential to be really good. I mean, Puma clearly thinks he's going to be good. They want him to be, like, their lead guy making the most money, but
I think I don't know if that says more about Puma or Trae Young, if we're going to go there.
Yeah, they think he has potential. But yeah, I think it slipped to 8 or 9, Cleveland or New York. A team, Cleveland's not a big market, but they have LeBron, so they have media spotlight, and New York's obviously a big market. I can see one of those teams trading up for, or just taking him, but...
And then in the middle somewhere, you got Marvin Bagley, you got Jaron Jackson.
Yeah, Jaren, I think Bagley's Jackson, supposed Jaron to go Jackson. Three, but...
I think the top three for sure. Bagley, Ayton, and then Doncic, for sure. That's what's going to... Those are the top three.
Yeah, I mean, you got the teams in the middle. You got Atlanta, you could go in a million directions. You got Memphis, where they still got Conley and Gasol. I don't really know what their plan is, but they still have them.
Memphis got screwed. They supposed to have the 2 pick. They were going to get one of those top guys, and they just... Now they have the 4 pick. That's quite a big drop for them.
Both Dallas and Memphis are the ones that got screwed. That's got to be really disappointing. 2 picks from what they were projected to get, or based off the percentages.
Talking about Dallas dropping, Dirk Nowitzki took to Twitter, and he didn't seem very happy.
Emoji.
He just tweeted, of course, ...
You know, he doesn't that many years left, so he's got to make them count while he still has them, but...
Yeah, that sucks. Can you imagine? That just really sucks.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I think that just about wraps it up. Any final thoughts, guys?
Want to talk about sports gambling being legal real quick?
Oh, that's amazing. I got a parlay going right now. I won't get into that. But
a great day for American sports. A great day for American degenerates.
Betting is fun, and now we can do it. So
our limited bank account is going to get even smaller. That's all I'm
going to
say.
Oh, I'm just waiting for the day. It's legal in Florida. I'll ride over to my casual 7.
We'll go to the Hard Rock.
I'll ride over to my 7-Eleven. I'll stick a parlay in there. I'll feel like a cool guy. And then I'll realize that I lost my money the same way I do now.
Just
you think sports gambling could like go into like the gas station and get a lotto ticket? You think there's gonna be a machine there where you can?
I don't think it would start like that, but maybe eventually.
I think eventually
the Hard Rock will 100% be one of these places.
Oh yeah,
absolutely. We're right. We live right next to an Indian reservation. And if any of you don't know, we live in South Florida. So yeah, we have the Hard Rock next to us. We have the entire Miccosukee Nation next to us. There's a lot of gambling.
They love
taking
our money.
So exactly. You know, when it comes to taking our money, they love it.
So they get to do more of that now, but that pretty much wraps up the podcast.
Yeah.
Thank you guys for listening, and we'll come out with our next one shortly.
Go follow us on Instagram and Twitter from Downtown 13.
And we will catch you guys next time.